Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I think that was not the order that I normally do that in, but it's fine. Off to a great start. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and sex blogger, and I'm pretty sure that is the order I do that in.
I think so, yeah. It feels Go so team. Early in the morning, and it's not even.
It's 11 a.m.
Yeah. Just we usually record at night when I'm hype. and I'm not hype yet, but that's okay. We can get there. I believe in us.
We got this.
We're talking about a subject that is actually hard to get hype about, but I think we're going to do okay.
Yeah. We got this.
Yeah.
I believe in us, yeah. Probably.
So we're talking today about celibacy and dry spells, which I think is interesting because we spend so much time on this show talking about sex and, like, not a lot of time talking about not having sex, which it's sort of like jazz. Like, sometimes your sex life is about the notes you're not playing, you know? It is important.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. how do you define a dry spell? And specifically, I'm wondering, like, whether you count sexting and phone sex and that kind of thing as sex with regards to being in a dry spell or not.
I would say a dry spell is just any length of time longer than you're used to between having sex, because I think it's different for everyone. And for me, when I was in a long-distance relationship, I considered, like, a lot of the sexting to be sex, because that was just how I had sex with my partner. But that's, like, if I was jerking off for him on camera, or if, like, we were sitting down sexting and probably not multitasking all that much. But not, like, sending each other sexy things periodically throughout the day.
Right. It had to be a more focused, deliberate interaction.
Yeah, like, dedicated sex times things.
Yeah. That's also what I call sex.
Yes. You know. But yeah, that I kind of considered sex. But yeah, like, sexy flirting, not so much.
Yeah. I used to be of the mind that, like, only in-person sex was actual sex, because, like, that was sort of the way I had experienced it, was, like, digital things didn't feel like sex to me ever, so I, you know, I wasn't, like, satisfied by them in the same way. But I'm finding now with phone sex with my partner that it's, like, gratifying psychologically in much the same ways that in-person sex is, so I don't feel sexually frustrated, even though we'll go long periods of time between actually having sex in person. So that's interesting. My perspective on that has sort of shifted. But I like what you said about how a dry spell is up to personal standards of, like, comfort and how long you usually go in between. I think that it kind of reminds me of how, like, a lot of psychological disorders are defined by the idea of personal distress, or, like, your life being affected subjectively by the disorder. So if you're bothered by it, then maybe you can consider it a dry spell, but, like, if you're not, then it doesn't have to be framed as a problem. Like, there's nothing wrong with taking time off of sex for any reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is the longest dry spell you've had since becoming sexually active?
Like, a year or so, I think. And I did that pretty frequently, back when I was dating someone who did not super like having sex all that often. So it was, like, pretty regular to go quite a few months or a year or so without having sex. 'Cause monogamy.
Yeah.
I was never good at monogamy at all.
It's okay, you figured it out now.
Yeah. It was like a piece of clothing that didn't quite fit.
You donated it, and now you're on to better things that fit you better. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I think my longest dry spell is a year and a half, which was So, like, half a year was I was in a monogamous relationship that was dying and that, like, needed to end, and I was too afraid to end it, and we weren't having sex anymore, and we weren't talking about it, which is, like, a death knell, I think, or certainly it is for me. 'Cause, like, if I am not having sex with a partner and still want to be having sex with that partner, I will definitely bring that up at some point and be like, yo, so, like, what's up with this? But I think I was just at a point where, like, I just didn't want it anymore. I knew I needed to get out of there for that reason and other reasons. So we broke up, and then there was another year after that where I didn't have sex at all. And it's really funny to me now to read my, like, journal entries and blog posts from that time, because I was, like, convinced that I wasn't going to have sex for, like, a very long time. Like, I was very much in the mindset that, like, I can only have sex with people I trust and know really well and am in a romantic relationship with, so, like, that's not going to happen for a while, so I guess masturbation is just my sex life now. And then I went through a slut phase, and a lot of things changed.
I was going to say, plot twist.
Yeah. I figured out how to do that casual sex thing, sort of. I mean, I know how to do it logistically. I'm still not good at it emotionally or sometimes physically, but I know the steps involved in finding sex.
In theory.
Yeah, I can get to the sex part. I just get, you know, really sad the next day, or during the sex itself, I'm really unsatisfied, but I got there, and that's the important thing, right?
It's more than I'm good at, to be honest.
See, like, this is the problem, like, when people are, like, if you're complaining about having not had sex in a while, and people are, like, just, like, get on Tinder, or, like, just, like, find someone, it's, like, I think a lot of people don't realize actually how many steps are involved in that process, and how much energy is involved in that process, particularly for, like, anxious people or introverted people. Or whatever.
It's just so boring.
Yeah, it's boring, it's time consuming, it's risky on many different levels. There's this one night when I was, like, intensely craving blowjobs because it had been a long time, and I got on Tinder, and I Tindered for must have been about an hour, just swiping and, like, talking to anyone who seemed vaguely interesting. And my criteria was just, like, the first person who I have an interesting conversation with, I'm going to go on a date with if they're available tonight and blow them. And nobody was interesting. Like, nobody could sustain a convo, like, at all. And I was like, well, I tried Tinder. Like, I don't know what to tell you. This is on you.
Yeah, I have met one person in the history of online dating that I was excited about. Like one. Everyone else is like, I suppose we can talk, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then the one that was interesting ghosted on me. So, like, all right. Sure.
One thing I appreciate about us and our differences is that I get excited about a lot of people just, like, based on the idea of them and, like, what little I know about them, and you get excited about very, very few people, but in the end we're both disappointed by the vast majority of people.
Yep. I don't know how to handle it when I get excited about people.
I know.
Like, I can count on one hand how many people a year that I meet and I'm like, wow, you are, hello, we should discuss this. And possibly blow each other. Probably blow each other. But yeah, that is so far and few between. I'm always like, what do I do with this? Like, how do I... Why is... How?
And I, like, comparatively, I'm very used to the feeling of, like, having a crush on someone and being excited about someone. And I still am, like, not good at dealing with it. I'm still, like, freak out every time and get way too nervous and don't know how to talk to people and... being a human is a journey.
It's an adventure.
Okay, so when you've been in a dry spell and you've been, like, missing sex and, like, frustrated about it, are you inclined to, like, look for a random hookup on Tinder or whatever, or does that, like, not really appeal?
No, that does not really... It's boring. Well, okay. So, first of all, I don't, like, when I'm in a dry spell, I'm not usually, like, craving sex. Mm. I, like, jerk off, but, like, it's very rare that when I'm in a dry spell, I'm like, oh, you know, I really need to have sex with someone right now. It just kind of turns off.
Mm.
When I'm not in a dry spell is when I'm craving sex. Like, when I've had sex recently, my body's like, excuse you, we remember this thing, and it's great. Right. So consider doing more of this thing.
Yeah, I find that really relatable, actually, because it's almost like detoxing from something. Because, like, I find if I have sex and then don't have sex for another few months or whatever, usually, like, the first month to 2 months is really difficult, and then after that, I'm kind of good. Like, I kind of, like, get back to my, like, equilibrium or whatever, and it kind of evens out.
Yeah, I mean, I have dry spells a lot more often than you do, so for me, it's, like, I don't know, maybe a month that I'm, like, remembering how great sex is and, like, I want to do the thing. But after that, I'm just like, nah, that's fine. But I don't really ever resonate with people on Tinder or whatever, so it's not exciting to me to be on there looking for a hookup.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I feel like anytime I've done that, I've done it because it felt like the thing to do. Like, people are like, well, if you want sex, get on Tinder. And so it feels like the thing you're supposed to do. But I just have never had those turn out to be satisfying. I think I've had maybe like one really, really good hookup from an online dating platform where it was like a legit one night stand. Like, we met that day, had sex, haven't seen each other since. And it was really, really, really good. But all the other times have been vastly disappointing. And so I've gotten to a point now where it's like, if I'm craving a Tinder hookup, I kind of know that I'm not really craving that. Like, I probably just need to, like, jerk off with some toys and watch some porn and maybe, like, talk to a friend or something, because I'm probably craving, like, orgasms and then also some kind of, like, social component, which, like, you don't have to get on Tinder to find that.
Yeah, the only times, like, I've been on online dating sites a little bit recently, and I think part of that is because I recently did a lot of sex stuff, and now I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going through that, oh yeah, this is great phase. But also, I've mostly just been on there because there's a lot of new restaurants near me, and I want reasons to go to them.
Yeah, fair.
So I'm like, let me take people on dates so I can go to this new burger and shake place that's opening in a month on my corner. Like, I just want excuses.
You know how Tinder, I don't know if they still have it, but they had at one point that feature where you could, like, set a status that's like, you want to go for drinks or you want to go for, you know, whatever. Oh, there's a very limited number of things you could choose from. And I always felt like you should be able to type your own status to specify exactly what you're looking for. Because what if it's like no strings attached, non-reciprocated oral sex? Or what if it's like just cuddling? Or like, there's this weird improv show happening tonight that I don't have a date to. Like, I think that that would be a much more interesting way of navigating that. And you could probably, like, learn a lot about something, someone by what they are looking for. But
I feel like, wasn't there a dating app where you posted your date and then matched with people based on the picture and the date they wanted to go on?
I like that.
I feel like that's smart. I feel like that was a dating app somewhere. I don't remember anything else about it. So maybe I just invented it and I'm about to be a millionaire. But I don't think it was my idea.
It's interesting.
We're talking to people. Tweet at us if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, please. I want to know. Because there are so many times when there's some strange thing that I want to go to that nobody in my life is available to go to. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to this alone. So bringing a random person from the internet might be an improvement. It might also just make it a whole lot worse, but that's always, I think it's the gamble.
Really interesting to see what people are excited about.
Yeah,
because, like, I don't know, I could browse and be like, oh, you're kind of cute, oh, that restaurant looks cool, all right, that seems like it's pre-planned what y'all are going to be doing together. Mm-hmm. And if the event and the person appeal to you, then I think for me as an anxious person, that cuts through a lot of the bullshit.
Yeah.
And is like, great, let's talk for a few minutes and then maybe go do this thing.
Yeah, makes sense. And it also is kind of the reversal of a problem I've had with Tinder sometimes, which is like, if the person and the location they chose both turn out to be boring or bad, then the date was a complete failure on every level. Like, I can't count how many times a random Tinder boy has had me meet him at, like, a craft beer bar where I am forced to drink an IPA that I'm not into, or, like, just, like, the broiest, like, diviest. Like, those are great, but, like, they're not where I would choose to go. So it's it's nice that at least if you choose a thing based on the date, that you probably will enjoy the activity, even if you don't enjoy the person.
Yeah, I always try and come up with creative dates so that there's something for us to pay attention to other than each other if we need to. Like board game cafes, great.
Yeah, yeah.
You can always talk about the game, regardless of what else you're doing.
So I want to go back to something you said that I found really interesting, which is that, like, now you're looking for sex because you were reminded of that sex is good. Because I actually have used Tinder in, like, kind of the opposite way, which is, like, if I was going through a dry spell and I was, like, lamenting that I hadn't had sex in a long time and maybe I'll never have sex again, sometimes I would find, like, a random dude on Tinder or whatever and go hook up with him as a way of, like, reminding myself that sex isn't always that good. Because sometimes I think I tend to, like, over-idealize sex as, like, a thing that can transform my entire life, which, like, when it's good, it does feel like it does do that, but I think the vast majority of sex is not at that level. So, like, after breakups or whatever, I've sometimes gone on hookups to sort of, like, recalibrate myself in the knowledge that, like, sex is just an activity that you do with another human. Like, it doesn't have to be life-changing, and there are other things that are, like, more mundane ostensibly but more pleasurable, like hanging out with a friend, watching your favorite show on Netflix or something, can be more fun than terrible sex.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also, like, for me, I've never been in a relationship where I had just, like, consistent access to sex. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a thing that's ever happened in my life. So I think it's a lot easier for me to default back to, like, well, we don't do this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's not a, like, weird or distressing place. Well, a little distressing, but, like, it's not generally a weird or upsetting place to be in for me. So I don't generally have that moment of, like, oh, I'm never gonna have sex again. It's like, I will probably eventually at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough because it can, like, sex can make you make decisions that you wouldn't otherwise make. Like, I've definitely stayed in relationships for longer than I probably should have because there was some part of me that was like, well, if I break up with this person, then I'm not going to have access to sex. Like, which sounds shitty. Like, obviously, there are other factors involved in that decision. But, like, that is always kind of something that I do think about and, like, weigh in my decision making. And it's not good because, like, to quote Alana Massey, dick is abundant and low value. And I would expand that to say that, like, sex in general, like, if your standards are low, you can find sex probably with relative ease, depending on your level of privilege and access to things and stuff. So, yeah, I tend to, like, put it on a pedestal, and sometimes I really need to remind myself that, like, it's always there. It's just a matter of, like, whether I want to put the work in and maybe lower my standards to find sex that isn't amazing.
Yeah. The other annoying thing for dating apps for me is, like, being a trans person on dating apps.
Right.
And, like, remembering the difference of when I, like, was presenting as a girl to now, and it's like, this is a lot more work, and it's still not worth it. Like, it was not worth it before, and now it's less worth it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if your attitude on dry spells has changed or shifted since starting T, because, like, I know that your sex drive is higher, but also, as you pointed out, like, navigating hookup culture is more difficult as a trans person. So, like, how are you feeling about that compared to how you used to be feeling about it?
I think I just jerk off more. Like, that's increased sex drive for me is, like, impacts my masturbation more than it impacted, like, relationships with other people.
Yeah.
And stuff. I still, yeah, I mean, I was, like, kind of a slut before T, and I'm still kind of a slut now, in that when I have access to people that I am into, I am, like, super down, but I still don't even know that many people in New York City, and dating apps are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that hasn't changed much, and I just jerk off more now.
Yeah. I used to be very much in the camp of, like, jerking off more doesn't help with these feelings of frustration because it's not the same as partnered sex. And it's true, it's not the same. But I think I've
come... usually better though.
Well, like, right, like there's like pros and cons to each, right? But like, I think I've come around to the knowledge that like, usually if I'm craving sex specifically with another person, it's because I'm craving something more social than sexual. And the times when I have been like most despairingly sexually frustrated in my life, I think have usually also been times when I didn't have good social supports. So like, I was probably craving the social part more so than the sexual part. So now like jerking off, it's not quite the same, but I do find it more satisfying of those needs than I used to because I have a more satisfying social life in general now, which has been interesting to notice.
Yeah. The thing I really crave and miss is like making out with people.
Yeah.
Cause that's not a thing you can get solo and that's really fun.
Yeah.
But, like, as for actually getting off, like, I can just do that myself. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, but I'll miss, like, making out with people a bunch or, like, getting fisted because I'm not that bendy. Or, like, it's just my arms are too short and my wrists and it's just, I can get real close, but, you know.
That's what you got to go to the gym for. Work on your flexibility for that purpose.
But yeah, it's, I'll crave things that I can't do solo.
Yeah.
But I won't, like, crave sex in general as much.
Mm-hmm.
Except again, like, except after I've recently had good sex, because, like, yeah. I did a couple weeks ago, and now I'm just like, okay, but when can I do more of that?
Yeah. I think that that's, like, maybe a responsive desire thing, like, what Emily Nagoski would call a responsive desire. I definitely noticed that in myself. Like, I'm definitely the person who, like, someone will come over and fuck me, and then, like, later that night I'll be thinking about it, and I'll be like, well, I gotta jerk off now, because that was pretty good.
I've seen some interesting conversation around that. Like, do you... I think it was Girl on the Net that tweeted something about it or whatever.
Yeah.
About, like, do you jerk off after sex? Which, like... I generally do, or get kind of salty if I can't.
It depends. Like, I mean, I think that there's a vast chasm in the middle of that question, which is, like, whether or not you actually got off during the sex.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've definitely had times when dudes were, like, not putting in the effort, and or it was just, like, we were just not a good fit chemistry-wise or physically or whatever, and so they left and I hadn't gotten off, so I might get myself off, although usually in that situation I'm so turned off by how bad the sex was that I don't need to. But, yeah, I've definitely, like, had times where the sex was really good, and then, like, a few hours later I was still thinking about it and needed to do something about it, which is nice. I usually like to, like, text people the next day and tell them about that, because that usually makes them feel pretty good, I think.
Yeah. I think even if I get off during partnered sex, it's very different from how I get off solo.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. And it tends to be less intense, so it's, like, having sex makes me crave jerking off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there... And I think it... I think the general idea is that it works in the opposite direction. But for me, like, jerking off is... kind of this central facet of my sexuality.
Yeah.
So, like, having sex, which happens somewhat less often, naturally, at the rate at which I jerk off, that, like, it makes me crave the orgasms that I can have solo after any orgasms that I have with partners. Like, it just kind of closes out the evening for me. Maybe it's an introvert thing. Maybe I just need to, like, reconnect with myself. That's a healing practice.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have a mutual friend who told me once that they almost never get off with a partner, so they view partnered sex almost as, like, an opportunity to harvest fantasies for when they're jerking off later, and that is, like, their ideal sex life, and they really enjoy that. And I was like, that is fantastic. Like, that is self-love in action. I love it.
Yeah, that's so good.
I
get off just very differently.
Yeah. I found it interesting that the last time my partner came to visit me in person, like, we had a ton of sex all weekend, but then he went home, and then the night that he arrived back home in New York, we had phone sex, because we were both, like, craving it, which you would think would be, like, not a thing. Like, if you fucked, like, 10 times in a weekend, why would you be craving phone sex with the same person, I guess? But it was, like, it is such a different thing, a different sensation, and a, sort of a different psychological experience. And it was like, we missed it because we weren't having it while we were together, which now that I'm saying this makes me wonder if we should, like, do a scene where we have, quote, phone sex while we're physically together. Interesting.
Yeah, I totally get that, because, yeah, when I was dating my long-distance partner, that, like, sexting felt distinctly different from, like, in-person sex.
Yeah.
And both were great, but in very different ways, mm-hmm. and sexting felt almost, like, more natural for our relationship, because we saw each other so infrequently.
Right.
That felt like this big core part of our sexual relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, being able to have sex in person was this nice, exciting bonus.
Yeah.
That kind of layered on top of that, mm-hmm. which is really cool, and I never really thought about it that way, but yeah.
Yeah. So what other kinds of things help you feel less sexually frustrated when you're going through a dry spell? Like, I really enjoy watching porn because it kind of gives, like, a psychological sense of that, like, partnered interaction. I also really like watching, like, really cheesy romantic movies or, like, TV shows with romantic storylines, because that sort of emotional excitement is sometimes what I'm missing from partnered sex. What other kinds of things do you like to do?
I just like flirting.
Yeah,
like, that's what I miss a lot too, is flirting and makeouts. Mm-hmm. So even if I can, like, hang out with someone and flirt with them a little bit or whatever, that's at least something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that will, or just, I don't know if it makes it better or worse, but just thinking about, like, good sex that I've had.
Yeah.
Or specifically, like, good sex that I've recently had that gives me all, like, the warm fuzzy feelings and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a tendency sometimes to feel, like, guilty or bad about myself when I would fantasize about sex from my past, because there was this sense of, like, I'm only doing this because I can't have sex in the present, and, like, I'm, you know, I'm living in the past or whatever. But I think that that's, like, a totally valid method of sexual self-expression and, like, a totally normal thing that people do all the time, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Like, in the same way as I will sometimes think about happy memories from my past when I'm feeling sad, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I also like making porn because, like, it makes me feel hot, and that's kind of cool. But I also get off on, like, watching myself get off, so.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, because
it's like partnered sex with myself.
Right. It adds this extra element of, like, someone looking at you, which is also present in partnered sex. That's interesting.
Yeah. I want to work on camming more, too, because I think that will also give, like, similar feelings.
Yeah.
But, like, also anxiety, so,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get really anxious every time I do camming. I've learned some tricks. Like, I usually orient the screen so that I can't see myself, because if I see myself, I will judge how I look. But, yeah, it's an interesting experience.
Yeah.
I also think, like, when I'm missing partnered sex, often I try to make my masturbation more like partnered sex, and there's a lot of different ways you can do that. Ramping up your fantasies. I'll sometimes, like, hold off on using a vibrator because, like, maybe my hands feel more like a partner's hands or mouth or whatever. There's different kinds of toys that are supposed to feel like partnered sex. Like, you've got your, like, self-thrusting fun factory toys and womanizers and satisfiers that are, like, suction-based types of toys, and then, like, the squeal with the flapping tongues. And so, like...
Oh, the squeal is horrifying.
But it's, like... Yeah, I mean, they're weird, but it...
It's like some nightmare shit. I don't... Why? It's a wheel of tongues. Like, I think I saw that in Resident Evil, or, like, this upsetting.
A boy on
Earth. And I gotta try... I gotta try the womanizer again.
Yeah.
Or satisfier.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really want that to work as a blowjob machine for trans cocks, and it really doesn't.
The bigger one might work. I don't know. I'm not sure if the actual nozzle is bigger. I haven't really compared, but...
Yeah, I have the Penguin, which has, like, kind of a big nozzle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's a really weird sensation for me.
It is, yeah. But I do like those kind of, like, off-the-beaten-path, unusual sensation types of toys for when I'm missing partner sex, because, like, you know, when someone's going down on me who hasn't gone down on me before or whatever, usually it's, like, not quite exactly the thing that I wish that they were doing or that would get me off more most efficiently, but there is something about that, like, difference and that not-quite-rightness that is, like, exciting in a way. To a point, mm-hmm. like, you know, some people are just not good at going down on me the way I like, and it is annoying, but, you know, there's a novelty factor there that's nice.
Yeah, I think that's another thing, because I jerk off so much more than partnered sex. When it's just a little bit off, I'm like, what is happening? Why? What do you mean you can't feel my feelings? Like, what do you mean you don't know exactly?
Yeah.
Come on.
There was a dude on OkCupid whose first message to me said that he had always wanted to build a robot with squeal wheels for feet. And I was like, you truly know your audience here. Like, I am the ideal person to receive this message. I don't think I went out with that guy. I should.
Can we talk for a minute, though, about, does your bio say that you're a sex educator or just a sex writer?
It says I'm a sex writer and that I have a sex podcast. And then there's a line at the end that says something like, I probably do some things that aren't sex related too, I guess. I don't know.
Mine says I'm a sex educator, which is a decision that I made.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to have to, like, disclose that, like, separately. I don't want to have to be like, oh, by the way. Because I feel like some people might feel some type of way about that.
Yeah.
So it's in there. But the number of people who are like, bet you could educate me.
Ugh.
I'm like, no. I had someone do that recently, and I'm like, that's, every time, I'm like, that's my job, why would I want to do that?
Yeah, no, here are my rates, like.
Why would that sound fun? And he was like, well, I didn't mean, like, a seminar, but, like, I've never done kink stuff, so no. I thought it might be, like, you could show me that, and I was like, no, that does not sound fun at all.
No, or, like, do some preliminary research first, at least, like.
Yeah, like. People for whom kink is, like, a foreign concept, or who are gonna be like, yeah, like, I'll smack your ass while we're fucking. That's kink, right? And I'm like, bruise me, please.
I was just, like, I was having a conversation last night about, I used to have sex toy reviewer in one of my online dating bios, and I would get a ton of messages from dudes being like, I'll help you test toys. And they thought they were being sexy and fun, but, like, what they don't realize is, like, testing toys is, like, not always a sexy process. In fact, like, sometimes it's very decidedly not. So, like, if you're agreeing to test toys with me, oftentimes it's like, here's this weird, scary-looking thing. Let's put it on your dick and see what happens. Like, I don't think that they know what they're signing up for.
Yeah, you should, every time they say that, you should pull out that fucking Lalo toy. What was it? The Ida or some shit? The one that, like, rotates?
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, that just causes me agony. I don't think that that's really going to hurt the other person too much, but.
Or just show it to them and be like, doesn't this seem fun to put your dick next to? And they'll just run away.
Send them a link to my teddy bear vibrator review. Like, yeah, you want to cuddle up with this guy with me? Sounds fun.
It's fuckboy repellent.
You know what, though? I actually one time went on a Tinder date where I was talking to this dude about sex toy reviewing, and I mentioned the teddy bear vibe because I was working on my article about that at that point. And then he came over to my house, and we sat on my bed, and he was like, well, Kate, you know what I want to see. And I had actually completely forgotten that we'd had that combo, so I was like, no, what do you want to see? I was, like, a little bit freaked out by this dude, and he was like, I need to see the teddy bear vibe. So I took it out, and we used it together a little bit, not to any success, which is not his fault.
Because it's horrifying. Yeah.
But I mean, this was a dude who was down, but I think most of the dudes who say that are not actually down for what they say they are.
Yeah, they have no idea what they're getting into. And I just hate the concept of trying to make my job sexy, because you would not do that if I had any other job.
Yeah.
Like, my other job is in video game retail, and you wouldn't be like, I'll test that new game with you, like.
Right.
like, wink, wink. Like, what?
Yeah. Why? Like, if you were dating a dentist, you might occasionally be like, can you take a look in my mouth and see if everything's good? But, like, you wouldn't expect them to do, like, free labor on you. You know, it's their job.
Yeah, well, and it wouldn't be, you wouldn't say it like it's a sexy thing. Right. Like, can you check me for cavities? Like, no!
I mean, unless that's your kink, in which case I wish you the best of luck finding someone who's a good fit with it.
Yeah, that does exist. Yeah. That is a hard limit of mine.
Yeah. Because your dentist was a clown.
He was! It was terrifying. I've told that story on the show
before. Yeah, you have. That's my favorite piece of deep cut Dildorf's lore, is that Bex's dentist as a child was a literal clown, but...
Worked at Barnum & Bailey part-time. Also pulled my teeth out of my head. You know. It's fine.
All right. Let's pivot back to the actual topic of this episode.
I've forgotten what it was.
So, have you ever made the conscious and deliberate decision to take some time off of sex for a while?
Nope. Not even a little bit. Yeah, no. Definitely not. I know you have, though.
I have a few times. Like, usually when I felt myself kind of lapsing into unhealthy patterns where I was over-relying on stuff like Tinder for my emotional validation and whatnot, and then there have also been times where, like, I have put myself out on a limb enough times in a row and gotten rejected enough times in a row that I kind of felt like I, like, ran out of bravery points for a while. And I was like, all right, I'm going to take a break from initiating sexual or romantic things. Like, I might say yes if someone asks me out or whatever, but I need to, like, replenish myself because I feel depleted as a person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's usually worked out pretty well for me. Like, I usually needed to get to a point, again, where I, like, realized that sex is not everything in the world, and which it was, like, hard when you work in sex, too, because, like,
yeah,
you're constantly writing about how transformative and important and central it is, and you kind of have to, like, zoom out and be like, oh, actually, like, it isn't, or it doesn't have to be. And there can be other things in my life. But yeah, it's hard when you're, like, consciously trying to avoid something and it is your literal job, because, like, I can't just give up all sex-related everything for the duration of this deliberate dry spell, because then I would make no money, so.
Have you ever, like, partnered with someone to have sex specifically for an experience that you can write about, like, where you both knew you were walking into it, like,
oh yeah,
let's experiment with this?
A few times, yeah. The most recent one was our buddy Dick Wound at the Off the Cuffs podcast. I had this assignment for Cosmopolitan where I was supposed to give a blowjob using this technique called sensate focus, which is where you give a blowjob for your, or perform oral sex for your own pleasure, or at least that's the context that I was using sensate focus in for this assignment. So really just focusing on the good sensations in your own mouth and not so much on what the other person is feeling, obviously also with consent.
Yeah.
So I thought that Dick would be a good pal to do this with, because our dynamic was such at the time that, like, he was a little bit, like, submissive to me, so, like, I felt like it would be comfortable for me to do that, and I wouldn't be worrying too much about, like, whether he was enjoying it, because I would just be like, this is for me.
Bitch, this ain't about you.
Which, actually, like, he was so, so great for that, because, like, yeah, he totally understood the spirit of what I was doing, and, like, even immediately after the BJ, I was like, can I interview you right now, like, for the thing? And he was like, oh, yeah, totally. And I just, like, naked, like, got out my notebook and started asking him questions.
Which is the most on-brand thing I think I've ever heard.
It was the best. It was so good. And I felt so, like, seen and understood and accepted as who I am in that moment, because I was like, he's not making me feel one iota of weird about doing this. Like, he is fully like, yeah, this was what we're here for. Like, why the hell not? That's great.
I think that's the thing. I, like, of all the reasons to want to have, like, a local person that I have sex with semi-regularly.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a nerd, but that's actually one of the biggest things.
Yes.
Where I'm like, I want someone who I can do weird shit with and potentially bad sex to experiment with.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, like, I either don't have the rapport with a lot of people, or like I'm like, no, this is the one sex I get. I don't want to do like
right.
possibly weird experimental stuff that could be fun, but in a very different way.
Yeah.
So like I that's one of the things I think I find most appealing is being able to just kind of have sex labs and be like, I wonder what happens.
Yeah, I wrote a blog post years ago that was, like, reviewing a bunch of different lipsticks for the purposes of blowjobs, and I did all the experiments for that post on a dildo, in part because I wanted, like, the scientific validity of, like, having it be the same thing for the same duration each time so that I could accurately compare the lipsticks, but, like, another reason was that I didn't have access to a lot of dicks at that time. I was in the middle of a pretty long dry spell, and a lot of people left comments or emails or whatever saying that, like, it wasn't a real or valid or legit experiment because, like, it wasn't a flesh and blood dick. And I see their point, but also when I was reading those comments, it made me so sad because I was at that point, I could not imagine having that much access to someone who would be willing to let me do that. Like, it just was, like, unthinkable to me. It made me really, really sad.
Yeah, no, I super understand that. I mean, we touched on this a little bit, but, like, as frustrating as it can be for, like, most of the obvious reasons to not be having sex for people who are allosexual, I think it's also an extra layer of frustrating for us because it's, like, I don't know about you, but I get a lot of, like, imposter syndrome around, like, this is my fucking job.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like as sex educators, we get this reputation or this idea that we should be having all the sex all the time, mm-hmm. and that's what makes us reliable. When meanwhile, it's like, I mean, yes, I've done a lot of sex stuff, and I've tried a lot of things, and I have experience in a lot of things, and also spent the last few years collecting information from other people who have done this too and like reading about it and studying, and like all of that information is valuable too, but it's really, really hard to not feel like it's this big secret that you're not having sex like all day every day.
Yeah, I definitely have the tendency to think of myself as like being pathetic sometimes if I'm not having enough sex or dating enough people, and I've kind of like come to accept my introversion as a valid thing, and that has helped me a lot with not feeling that way anymore, because I'm like, what does it mean about me that I am not constantly pursuing people on Tinder? Like, does it mean that I, you know, am fundamentally flawed or whatever? And I think actually what it means is, like, I just don't like being around people that fucking much. Like, that's, like, that's what I've ultimately come to realize is, like, I really like being alone, and as such, these days I'm, like, very picky about who I will spend my time with if I don't have to, because, like, you know, I don't want to have that much social time proportionally in my life, so, like, I better be with good people.
Yeah, I'm not positive what date this episode airs on, but I'm either just about to go to kink camp or just got back from kink camp, in which case I hope I had a good time.
Yeah, have fun or welcome back.
Yeah, but I'm going to kink camp for 5 days. And because I'm teaching, I have access to a cabin, but it is a cabin full of other humans, many of whom I know and like, mm-hmm. and I'm still bringing a tent. Because the idea of not having a space that I can be completely alone in, that is my space, mm-hmm. for 5 days, sounds like a nightmare. Like, I recently, when I went to APW, was sharing space with a lot of people for a while, and they're people I adore, like, people I have a lot of fun with, and I kept having moments where I'm like, I'm gonna go walk somewhere, alone, goodbye. And just having those, like, 15, 20 minutes here or there was super helpful, but still, by the end of the weekend, I was like, I need to be home, in my bed with my cat.
You mentioned allosexuality, which is the opposite of asexuality. So I did just want to, like, briefly talk about asexuality because, like, we're talking about not having sex. So it seems like an important thing to touch on. People exist who are asexual or who are on the asexual spectrum. And that means that they don't experience sexual attraction or they only experience it to a certain extent. And that doesn't mean necessarily that they don't like sex or don't want to have sex. It just means that they don't experience the attraction. And I actually have, like, known a few people who probably were ace or were, like, on the ace spectrum, but, like, hadn't realized that about themselves. And, like, at the time that I knew these people, I, like, didn't really have that concept. Like, I wasn't super well-versed in it either, so I didn't think to suggest it to them. But it's, like, these people, like, often go through a lot of pain and, like, psychological turmoil trying to figure out, like, why they just don't want sex and why they feel like they're different from everybody else. And it's sad. And, like, I think it's important to acknowledge that whether you're asexual or on the ace spectrum or you just, like, don't feel called to have sex for, like, a vast variety of other reasons, like trauma or introversion or just, like, going through a phase where you're not feeling it, like, that is completely valid. And I think our society really puts a lot of emphasis on the idea of a dry spell as, like, a bad thing, but, like, it totally doesn't have to be. And, like, there are probably other better, more neutral or positive terms that we could use in place of the phrase dry spell that would be, like, less stigmatizing for people who have actually chosen that.
Yeah, I definitely think of dry spells as, I was going to say involuntary, but I'm not trying to invoke incels here.
Oh, we got to talk about incels in a sec here.
Yeah, yeah. Shockingly,
yeah.
I've gone very long times without sex and never threatened anyone. Who'd have thought? But I think of dry spells as more like something that you're inherently, like, looking to change eventually at some point.
Yeah.
Whereas I think of, like, ace people as having a very different experience from that. And, I mean, I'm not going to police the words people use for themselves, but I wouldn't use dry spell for, like, an ace person. Or maybe not even celibacy. Because, again, celibacy, I think, has this connotation of whether it's something you decided on or is just kind of happening because of your experience. It's kind of a word that has connotations, at least for me, of not doing something you want to be doing.
Yeah.
Versus not doing it because that's just kind of how your life works.
Right. Yeah, I dated someone a couple years ago who, in retrospect, I'm pretty sure was ace, but didn't have the language for that, and he just thought of himself as being, like, fundamentally broken, which is really sad. But he never told me that he, like, didn't want to have sex. He was just, like, really sort of, like, reluctant and awkward about it always. And it got to a point where, like, I started to feel like it was about me, like, that he wasn't attractive to me and that there was something wrong with me. I realize now, looking back, that, like, if I had known that he was maybe on the ace spectrum, I think I would have been more compassionate about it. Would not have worked for me in a monogamous situation, but, like, I just was viewing that very much through an allosexual framework where we assume that, like, if someone doesn't want to have sex with you, like, all the time, that it's, like, a problem with them or a problem with you or both, or, like, the relationship is doomed. And it's, like,
yeah,
no, that's not always necessarily the case, although it certainly can be.
Yeah.
So incels, though. y'all, I don't know if you've been following the internet recently.
Have you been on the internet?
Yeah, so, like, following an attack in Toronto, where I live, which was fucking terrifying, there's been a recent burst of news coverage of a movement that's been around for actually a pretty long time, which is the incel movement, which is involuntary celibate. And it's this movement of, like, almost exclusively white straight dudes, I would say. Yeah. I haven't really looked at, like, demographic stuff on that, but I mean, I would assume so.
But, like, entitlement, so.
Right, exactly. And they're saying that, like, the fact that no one will have sex with them is the fault of the people who won't have sex with them and of society for not mandating that, you know, everybody has to be paired off and have sex. And it's just, it's upsetting for so many reasons, like misogyny and violence and all of these reasons. But, like, I have been reflecting a lot since this has been happening about, like, what it was like to grow up as someone who, like, viewed myself as being fundamentally unattractive, like, being a sort of, like, chubby, unconventionally attractive person. And, like, the fact that I never once in my life have had the thought, like, that person doesn't want to fuck me. Fuck them. It's their fault. Like, it just would never, ever occur to me to think that thought. Like, because, like, I think almost anybody who's not a straight white cis dude is socialized to turn inward whenever people are not reacting to you the way that you would prefer that they would be, and to be like, well, what's wrong with me? Like, what am I doing, or who am I that is causing this to happen? And sometimes it becomes this, like, deep self-hatred and insecurity. And it's like, no, like, people are allowed to have tastes. Like, people are allowed to just, like, not be into you, and you're also allowed to not be into other people. And that's, like, nobody's fault, really. Like, you don't really need to blame other people for that, or yourself.
Yeah, and, like, I, from the other end of the spectrum, am, like, super into me. Mm-hmm. And I will, like, very easily be like, no, I'm great. You should want to make out with me. But, like, also, even with that, I have never been like, how dare you not make out with me? Like, I have not followed it to that point. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't think I'm cute, you're objectively wrong, but that's beside the point. Like, again, people are allowed to have tastes. They're allowed to be wrong. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just really sad. I think another thing I see in the incel movement that makes me sad is this kind of, like, defeatist attitude of, like, a lot of these dudes are like, well, I'm ugly, so no one will ever love me, and there's nothing I can do about that. And I actually really don't think that's true. I have a blog post, which I will link in the show notes, which is, I think it's called something like 10 Easy Ways to Make Yourself More Attractive. And it's things like cultivate passion and, like, stay up to date on current events, because then you're more interesting as a person, and, like, be, you know, a good conversationalist and stuff like that. Like, these are, like, relatively small things that can make a big difference. And I think in our culture, like, we're so looks focused that we tend to be like, well, if I don't look a certain way, I'm unlovable forever. And I really don't think that that's true. And I think that that can lead to really harmful ideas sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you said, like, ways to make yourself more attractive, my first thought was do interesting things.
Yes, yeah.
Like, go on adventure, because I love storytelling and stories. Mm-hmm. And if you can tell me the stories of some weird, interesting shit you've done, like, that's super attractive.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you too, like, because we do all the weird sex stuff and everything, a pretty common compliment I get is like, wow, that's so interesting that you do that stuff. And I'm like, mm-hmm. It's my life. Like, you can do that stuff too. Like, you can go be interesting. Like, just go on adventures, find something that interests you and follow it.
Yeah, and, like, maybe also, don't blame other people if they don't find you interesting, because, like, someone will. That's just kind of how the world works.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. Like, so frustrating. Anyway, I hope this has been an enlightening episode and that it didn't leave you too dry, if you know. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
What even? I could probably come up with a better pun than that. Hope this episode wasn't too much of a hard sell a bit.
No.
I don't know. I got nothing. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. We're both going to be at Woodhull Sexual Freedom Summit, and I'm going to be at Sex Down South also teaching. So we've got a busy calendar ahead of us. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and at thedildorks.com. You can find us by searching us in your favorite podcast app, where you should also rate and review us, because it makes us easier to find in the charts, and, like, also makes me smile.
Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. You can find all of his music at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Bye.
I'm also gonna be at camp if this comes out before camp, so come see me. I'm gonna be teaching 4 different workshops, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Do you wanna say what camp?
Said camp. Dark Odyssey Fusion. Okay. Camp. Y'all know.
You know.
Kink camp. And then I'm just going into the woods and just teaching randomly.
It's invite only.
Just find me.
If you're gonna be there, you know already.
It's not invite only. There's a quest. It's like a treasure hunt.
Okay. It's a meritocracy. You have to follow
the clues. Yeah.
So many dildorks things. I was trying to come up with a pun for... What is... I don't know. Proceed.
It's too early. Your pun brain hasn't turned on yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, this outro is a mess.
Why isn't our spreadsheet where we have all of our episode concepts listed, why isn't that called the dildorcument?
Because I made it, not you.